You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, all. Welcome back to Thesis on Joan. We're here for season two.
Hey, queers. Welcome back. Thesis on Joan is a podcast dedicated to amplifying voices from the LGBTQ plus community in the New York performing arts scene and examining the industry from a queer perspective. Join us as we sit down with groundbreaking theater folk, from Brooklyn cabaret performers to people backstage and on Broadway.
For many queers, theater has been an escape. This podcast looks to have open conversations on where we've come from and where we're heading as a community while queering the canon along the way.
We are so excited to share even more interviews and discussions about queer theater with you this season.
Yeah, we have some great stuff planned, but first, how you doing, Megan? It's been a minute since the end of our season one.
It has. I feel like so much has changed since December.
Yeah.
in many, many different ways. Yeah. Oh, I didn't tell you this yet. I got vaccinated this week. So.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. We're both one dose in. So that's very exciting.
Yeah. I got mine like a week ago. And yeah, it's exciting. Yeah. It's hopeful.
Yeah. I was like, the BMI system is oppressive, but thanks for this one win.
Right. Use it to your, it's been oppressed us our whole lives, or at least for me.
And
that's one time that we can use it to our advantage. If you don't think you qualify, check your BMI, because it's a real racist, fucked up way of measuring people's quote unquote health. You can be any size really and have a maybe unhealthy, obese BMI. So check it out.
Yeah, I think most people that I know do. So yes. you are eligible. But yeah, it was kind of like vaccine Disneyland in there. It was just felt like a little bit of a step closer to something better.
Yeah, I really hope so.
I don't know. How about you?
My big news is that as of January, my partner and I adopted a dog, and his name is Business, and we call him Busy for short. And he has just like completely changed our lives and makes every day so much happier.
He is such a joy. I mean, just from being like an onlooker to the Business time, he's just and he loves my dog, Indy. They're like the bestest of friends.
Yeah, they love playing together. They both have a lot of energy.
So much energy. I remember when you were first telling me that you were getting Busy, and you described an area of the apartment as the business center. And I was like, cool. Holly's got like a nice computer setup going on. Like they've got this great workstation. And it took me like a half a day to realize what you meant. And the puns abound with Busy.
Yep. There are so many opportunities. My coworker told me that when I posted the picture of Business the first time he experienced snow, because he's from Texas, the caption should have been, "There's no business like snow business."
Oh my gosh, missed opportunity. Well, yeah. We're due for another nor'easter, right? We're getting 60 degrees this week. It'll snow next week.
Second winter, it'll be great. But yeah, he does have an Instagram. If you like dogs, it's Business the Dog NYC. And he's like a little kind of schnauzer looking terrier dog. He's a mix between a long haired chihuahua and some kind of terrier. They don't know. But he is very cute, if I have to say so.
Yeah, Business is the best thing to happen this year, I think. So.
And then Indy was the best thing last year. So.
That's true. It's always dog related.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'll put Indy's Instagram up too. Because
awesome. Oh, everyone. Yeah, Indy's just freaking gorgeous.
I know. She's like a little manic supermodel, but she's she lives a good life, that's for sure, with us home all the time. So.
Oh, yeah. Same. So something new we want to do this season is talk about shows that we've seen, some like queer-centered shows at the top of the episode. These are not reviews, but these are mostly just us as queer folks responding to shows about queer folks. By queer folks, and we're super excited about that.
Please send recommendations our way. If you have a friend or know of a performer who you love that's doing something digitally, we'd love to check it out. So keep us in the know. Help keep us current, kids.
So the first show we're going to talk to you about today, we're super excited about. It's called Hi, Are You Single? By Ryan Haddad, directed by Laura Savia and Jess McLeod. This was presented by Woolly Mammoth Theater Company in association with I Am A Theater Company, and it was streaming throughout the month of February.
And this one was just like, it was such a delight to, I know I'm stealing your line, Holly, but it was so great to see something that was happening inside of a theater. And they actually had a small audience mm-hmm. there from Woolly Mammoth of people who had been tested and worked on the show. So to just actually, you know, not have that awkward Zoom pause and hear genuine reactions to what Ryan was doing. But this show is about Ryan's life as a gay man in the dating world living with cerebral palsy. And it's a little bit about like his escapades and dating and some really interesting reflections on kind of what that means to him.
Yeah, it was great that both of the shows we're going to talk about today happened actually inside theaters. For me, it was just such a nice escape from the Zoom backgrounds I look at every day. And like my suspension of disbelief just like shot up 200%. This show gave me so many like baby queer feelings. All the, you know, Ryan talking about going to gay bars and trying to like hit on people or get hit on, and his just like super innocent attempts to, to talk to anyone. Yeah.
I can't stop thinking about the parading when yes. he talks about like when you do a pass through the bar and you're just like, well, it starts less direct and then he starts saying the name of the show, Hello, Are You Single? But like, how many times have you been in a bar, like baby gay, and just doing a lap just to see like what's new? It's kind of like what yeah. I do at Trader Joe's, like what's new on the shelf, you know?
It's so true, though, that like you go to a gay bar with your friends or a friend and then you get like stuck in a place and then everyone thinks you're inaccessible. So like, how do you make yourself available?
Right. And I was like so inspired by like him with his own like mobility things that he's working with, and he's still doing the parade, you know? Yeah. He's like, just because I have my walker over here, like I'm not standing in the corner. Like everyone wanted him to kind of like stay put, and it was cool to hear that part of his story. And another, like, we were both so excited to find out he was from Ohio because he starts naming like Cleveland gay bars, and we're like, yes. Not just New York City gay bars. But yeah, something that he talked about that I was really struck by, and I feel like I've seen it in some other pieces by queer creators, is that you go to gay bars as like a baby queer with the sense that this is going to be your safe space. And when that falls through is like, oh, this space is safe, but not for someone like me. And it's like, where do you go from there? And that was like a really poignant moment that I'm sure many folks have felt on different levels. And the way he articulated it was like definitely so funny, but also so endearing and sincere at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And so vulnerable. Like in the second half of the show, like the first half of the show, he details a lot of micro or macro aggressions that he experienced as a disabled person in gay bars or in gay dating,
special type of dating.
and then like the second half of the show, he really goes into like how he's had transgressions against people and how he's been prejudiced or, you know, ignorant and hurt other people. And it was just really refreshing to see that honesty and vulnerability and able to like to actually confront that and hopefully, you know, move to change those behaviors and acknowledge that, you know, even though we may be oppressed in some ways or, you know, experience, oppressed in some ways, we definitely are affecting and harming other people who might not have the same experiences and privileges that we do.
Yeah, I thought that was very, very brave of him, but also, like, very necessary for the show to be as impactful as it was. Like, it would have been, like, a fun romp through, like, someone's dating life if he hadn't brought it around to really be introspective about it, too. And, yeah, it was just a really incredible performance. And I hope he continues to like take it on a grand tour once he's able to do it in person in front of a live audience.
Yeah, I think like his interactions with audience members, I think, are some of the most poignant moments too, when he brings someone from the audience up on stage and dances with them. And in this particular recording, it's someone from the creative team, so they know each other. But like him talking about this moment of intimacy and getting to like ask that person questions, especially I think in COVID, where like seeing two people so close to one another, even though they were masked, was really special and really heightened that experience of just two people getting to know each other. So, and then the other show we both got to see was the Black Queen Screen Test, written and directed by Jerome A. Parker, and was a Patterson Projects workshop production sponsored by an artistic residency with the Tank NYC. And they broadcast a streaming version of this for about a month. So the Black Queen Screens Test is an all-Black virtual workshop production of The Black Queens, or House of Dinah, built to elevate and theatrically explore the live. So this show is an absurd musical which taps into the art of drag, mixes lip-syncing and live moments of dance and music to tell an intergenerational Black queer story of self-reliance, resilience, and survival. So this was a show, it was broken up into three different acts. I thought it was interesting they sold tickets to each act individually, so you could just view one act or you could see the whole thing. And it followed this cafe, this diner, where a young femme person comes in needing kind of help and shelter from, it looks like she's just been physically assaulted. And the folks there kind of take her in, but also take advantage of her and kind of enslave her for service, which I was a little confused by the ending. But it was such a beautiful, I thought, celebration of dance and like the legacy of the civil rights movement and how it relates to like current movements. And, you know, the costumes were so amazing and beautiful and like celebratory of, I thought, like some queer drag and culture. Yeah. And it was just amazing to see again another show in a theater. And, you know, this was, I think, a much lower budget production than the other piece we saw, but it was really beautiful. And they had like really amazing imagery involved. There were like nooses that they were using as a bell rope. Yeah, they did a lot with what they had.
It took some time for that to acknowledge the noose was a bell. I was like, why is there just a noose in the back of this scene? Yeah. I was like, someone please explain this to me. Yeah, I almost feel like the way that they did some in-person, well, I guess it was all in-person, but the way they had like the shots on an individual and then the dance scenes in the wider theater kind of gave it this like magical dream quality that I thought was like really enticing, because you weren't really sure like what was happening in the reality of the play and what was more like in the characters' heads or in their memories, which I thought was really beautiful, especially Holly, after you read the description with that line, like intergenerational. I feel like I would go back and watch it in a different way if I was reflecting on that more and how it was staged. To think about like how it's being perceived through the eyes of the different characters. But yeah, I was very intrigued by like the use of Dinah Washington's music, because she's one of those many performers from that time that once I heard a couple songs, I was like, oh, I've heard that before, but I had no idea who this performer was. I also have no idea how she's connected to queer culture and being a queer icon. So that was something that I definitely like to explore more, but I'm glad that the show wasn't like an explanation of that, right? It was more like a celebration and a lived experience of it.
Yeah, it was such a nice mix of like lip syncing and original songs too, and then the dance pieces. It was like such a great mix of things to see. Going back to like the imagery, like Wilhelmina, who was like the serving person, when the show starts, she always had like an orange box around her face. Did you notice this?
Yes. Was this on purpose? I
think so. Like, she was the only one who had that throughout the whole show. And I was like, oh, is that like, we're supposed to like focus on her, or is it like, like a framing, she's in a box? I don't know. I was trying to figure out like what the symbolism of it was, but it definitely like kept me interested.
I thought the choreo, I know we talked about it a little bit, the choreography was incredible. The way that like kind of inclusion of like classic, but also using like very ball culture reference, like dance moves, was just like Voguing, such a, such a cool collaboration.
Yeah. And I feel like this was an all black team, and I probably, you know, thinking about black audiences, and this isn't necessarily like created for us. So like, you know, we probably didn't even pick up on all the references or all the nuance to it, but, I really enjoyed watching it. And I loved having the intergenerational aspect and having like the elders there and talking about like their involvement in the civil rights movement, about like some gay group sex in bushes, like during protests. that was all really fascinating. And I wondered if this production was like talking or thinking about how like older generations of, queer community, how they accept, you know, trans folks or gender nonconforming or non-binary folks, and how, you know, maybe some like older generations of civil rights activists or activists in general aren't as accepting or like open to different gender presentations or identities as, you know, younger folks today are, which I think is maybe like what the ending might have been about. But yeah, I'm not completely sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to see whatever else this team brings to the world. And getting to see this in person one day would also be amazing.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm excited to see like what happens next with this production, with this show.
And shout out to the Tank. Tank is always out there hustling and just getting stuff done, and
offers free space, so much free space to artists. Like, if you don't know about them and if you have a project, definitely hit them up.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So we're super excited to jump into this interview. But before we do, we just wanted to ask who you wanted us to talk to in the rest of the season. You know, we plan on going through the rest of the year, so we have lots of interview slots. Please let us know who are some of your favorite queer artists or administrators or stage managers or designers, anyone in the theater community we're excited to talk to.
And we are thrilled that our first guest of the season is the incredible L. Morgan Lee. So let me tell you a little bit more about her before we get into the interview. L. Morgan Lee is an award-winning actress and seeker of light. Her performance in the Pulitzer Prize-winning musical, A Strange Loop, garnered her an Obie Award as well as a Lucille Lortel nomination. That production gave L. Morgan the distinction of being the first openly trans actress to originate a role in a Pulitzer Prize-winning piece of theater. Other credits include national and international tours and projects with Long Wharf Theater, Musical Theater Factory, Ars Nova, Fifth Avenue Theater, and more. She is dedicated to being a part of work centering underrepresented voices on both stage and screen. She needed a hero, so that's what she became. Welcome to the podcast, Elle Morgan.
Hi, Elle Morgan. It's so nice to have you on Thesis on Joan. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for asking me to be here.
Yeah. So we usually start with our guests introducing themselves with their name, their pronouns, and whatever you want to share about how you identify.
Sure. I am Elle Morgan Lee. I use she and her pronouns, and I identify as a Black woman who is trans and queer.
And we're going to take it back a little bit. On your website, you said that you took a step back from the business, and when you returned, your career and life, in a sense, started all over. So could you tell us a little bit more about your decision to return to the theater industry?
Sure. And so on the website, I'm still fiddling with like how exactly to word that, because I do want to put out sort of a bit of the story. I didn't take a like an official step away. It was more of a like I laid low for a moment. So I wasn't like actively pounding the pavement and putting myself in front of all these people. Instead, I was doing a lot more soul searching and taking time to really figure out myself and the things that were sort of starting to come together in my head. There had been many years of just question marks and not necessarily having the right kind of language to piece together like why I am or was who I am or was. So I took a moment to kind of lay back, and like the things that I was even being called into audition for, just weren't things that I felt particularly connected to. And I really wanted to do a little bit of soul searching to understand like, why is this? Because at this point, you've been in the city long enough that you should have started to get into more of a groove, but things really just are not sinking together. And you know what's going on really, but you don't want to really step into it because you're terrified. So like, let's take a moment to see like what that's about. And so I did that. And so when I came back into the business, I mean, mind you, through all that, I had been working on A Strange Loop and doing random like workshops and readings and things. So around The Strange Loop, like a year or so before A Strange Loop is when I was more public. And once I became public, it's almost like things just went, like took off all of a sudden. It's like the universe saying, you need to tell the truth so that I can actually put you in the driver's seat.
That makes so much sense. Something else on your website about one of your favorite quotes, she needed a hero, so that's what she became. Can you tell us more about what that means to you and how it informs the art you make?
Of course. She needed a hero, so that's what she became is I didn't have anyone to look to. I'd met trans people, sure, certainly, but no one was doing what I wanted to do, and no one was sort of that person for me to look to as a child and growing up. So I know I didn't have that. So I want to do my part as much as I can to like be that for someone else.
Have you had folks reach out to you and like kind of tell you about their own story and their own journey?
Little bits here and there. It always makes me so awkward because I'm like, oh God, I'm still going through this too. I'm like, you're struggling through this and you're saying how much I've helped you. And I'm like, it's so crazy because I think that we never stop going through. We never stop growing. We never stop evolving to where we need to go. So it's interesting when people mention that you've somehow touched them or somehow moved them because I'm like, it's crazy. I feel like I'm always the student. I can never really be the teacher. But I guess even in that is teaching to some extent. It's like we never get there. And anyone who thinks that they are there, I'm kind of nervous to talk to.
That's really great to keep in mind. And I'm going to store that away right now.
the people who just know everything and are already arrived and already there. It's like, I really have no interest in what you have to say. Like you're not, we are always learning. If you can't learn, then I'm not interested in you.
Yeah, no, that's completely true. So let's take it over to Strange Loop and talk about Strange Loop a little bit. So it received so many well-deserved accolades last year. Can you tell us a little bit more about being a part of the show and what it was like when it was announced that it won the Pulitzer Prize?
it was a gift to be a part of the show on so many levels. I mean, we have become a family over the years. And I think that Michael's voice is voice as a writer, voice as a person. Michael's voice is so necessary right now. And it's, I think the Pulitzer situation was a, the Pulitzer situation. Hearing about the Pulitzer, it's not something that you ever imagine. And I think more than anything, it's like, yes, we were super excited. We were, I mean, knocked over that, that the show received that honor, but we also were in a space of this award belonged to Michael. And this award was for Michael's piece. It wasn't necessarily even our performances that got the Pulitzer. It's Michael's piece that got the Pulitzer. So it's more of a celebration of Michael's voice getting that much more visibility, and sort of the pride in being a part of that happening.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but A Strange Loop was just, I mean, it was a wonderful process. I mean, I came out, I guess you could say, I hate that term, but I became vocal about gender. I became more vocal about my gender during the workshopping process of the show. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of moments where, I could have not, there were a couple moments when I was not going to be a part of Playwrights, because I had pulled my, asked to be pulled out, basically. I had said to them, I think that this is someone else's story to tell. And I don't want to stand in the way of that story being as authentic and as beautiful as it can be. So I can pull myself out and I will be in the front row cheering you all on. And then there were conversations that were apparently happening behind my back up to that point, where they were like, well, no, we need to chat with you. We want to take you to dinner really quick and like have a chit chat. And they were like, we were talking about you behind your back. And just so you know, we've already been discussing this and we've already been talking about the fact that, your presence in the show, expands the reach of the show. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we want someone else to even come into this because we want you. Like, you're the person that this has been built around. You're the person that's been here with the family this long. And we really want to, continue to foster that and letting people see that. And like, we will work with you to figure out the things that made you feel like this was not a space for you to be in. It's like, and when those moments come up in the rehearsal process, let us know. And like, and it was really lovely. I think that that work will always continue to be done sort of in the flows of shows and that kind of a thing. But there was, for instance, one song in the show that I've always felt very uncomfortable about being in. The song is Memory Song, which is like, it's like one of the trademark songs of the show that everyone knows and sings. And I always felt very awkward about being in the space during that song. And so I brought it up during the rehearsal process and, you know, I still was there when we were on stage blogging and I was like, y'all, like, this is, can we please find something? Cause I feel so uncomfortable in this moment. And like they did a really good job of listening and like, we figured out a way for me not to be on stage during that. And like it, the moment got to be exactly what I feel like it should be. And I would say, I think that there was also at that point in my own journey, some sort of insecurities about how I would be received in the show and how the audience would see me in the show. So I was just very, persistent on wanting to make it very clear who I am and make sure that the waters were not muddied at all. Cause I had a feeling that the show would probably get attention. And I was like, the last thing I want and the last thing any trans person wants is to be in a show and then have like reviews come out or something happen. And then you are misgendered somewhere. And so I think for me, that was like it was a major concern because I had never been in a space, since I had been vocal, I had never been in a space where I was getting that much exposure by this many strangers. So it was very like, I have no idea what they're going to think or what they're going to say, but I would say by the middle of the run, I could have very well been in that number that I felt uncomfortable with and I would have been fine. I think it was more about just wanting to be very clear. It was more about clarity and more about my feeling like I was sort of invading on the space of these Black gay men. Mm-hmm. And so I think like if for some reason there were another, you know, if something were to happen in the future with the show, if that discussion came back up again, I think that there's a little bit more flexibility now that I do know how I'm received and how I'm seen. And now that I feel more comfortable in my own transition and such. But I think it was really beautiful that they took the time to see me and to have those conversations.
That's amazing that sounds so collaborative and respectful of working with you. That's awesome.
And Michael Jackson, Stephen. It's Michael, Stephen, Raja, Rona. That team was just also, they are all artists who in so many ways are a bit underrepresented themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, people who are not seen see everything. Mm-hmm. I think that they have a chance to do the work and create the kind of environments that they want it to be in or that they want to be in. So
it's so powerful to hear that, like, and to hear that your thought process going into it was what probably so many people experience is like, well, I know that this something I'm going through personally is going to make me not right for this role. So in your mind, already taking yourself out of the equation, and mm-hmm. to hear that is
that now space is made. So yeah. Like now also like now where there was not a woman in the show before, now there is a spot for women in the show. And I think like that's another conversation in itself about, I think it's kind of cool that there's a trans woman that has made that space, because now the track is just a woman. She's not specifically trans. Mm-hmm. She's a woman. So there could very well be at some point in the run of the show one day, a cis woman in that space, and knowing that like a trans woman created that space. See, we are giving to the room as well. We're not just looking to be a part. Like we're actually wanting to make that room larger for everyone.
Ugh. That's amazing. Speaking of making the room larger, a strange loop calls for a big black and queer ass American Broadway, hashtag strange loop on Broadway 2022 or 21. Do you think after the demands on white American theater in the past year, do you think we're any closer to that reality, or what changes have you seen or want to see?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The big black and queer... Big black and queer ass American Broadway show. It's funny. This is one of those things. So I think that like the conversation around what queerness is such a vast one, and like the number of things that are sort of included in that thing. So I think like it's an example, for instance, where I think that this big black and queer ass American Broadway show is specifically the show that Usher wants to build. But I don't necessarily think it's always the show that like every single individual thought at every moment wants to build. And so like the space I come from, I'm like here to cheer on that big black queer ass American Broadway show. But like, I'm not centered in that queer ass story necessarily, unless it's being built in a specific kind of way. Mm-hmm. So like, cause for instance, I identify as queer, but the way I use it is very, from a space of, I don't believe that the words that were given to us were actually made with us in mind. I don't believe a lot of the labels that have been handed out to us in terms of sexuality, were meant for trans people, to be honest with you. So I feel very kind of like uncomfortable taking on some of those other words because I just don't feel attached to them the way I do feel that attached to queerness. And I think queerness then has this umbrella that is a little bit more accepting of sort of any identities that may or may not fall within the normal sort of scope of things. So whereas like, I'm not like a pink hearts and rain. Why am I pink hearts? But I'm not like a unicorn and rainbows kind of a person, necessarily, in that like, I don't wear things on my forehead. And I feel like that space is actually within queerness, but is so rarely seen or discussed. So I think that the show, the big black and queer ass American Broadway show that Usher wants to create, is probably a lot more bells and whistles than anything that I particularly need. But I'm here to cheer his story on and help him, you know, get what he wants because he deserves that. I do think that this white American theater demand situation is so layered. And I think that we are closer in that there are the beginnings of conversations happening. And I say beginnings because I think one of the biggest things that I have been really personally frustrated with about the, like where we are today, as opposed to where we were a year ago, is that there are people listening and doing work to some extent. But I think that it's turned into such a black and white issue that it starts to really diminish the conversations that could be had right now. It's so much more expansive than just a black and white conversation, because even within black and white, there are so many underrepresented groups of people that are not in the discussion at all. Not to mention that there are more races in our world than black and white.
What?
So it's like, I feel like, imagine that. I think it's, I'm a little nervous actually that we will get to the other side of this and we'll see lots of black faces in the mix and lots of black people in sort of positions. And like for black people, that's amazing. Great. But how many of those people will be cis? How many of those people will be sort of societally considered thin? How many of those people will be, completely like able-bodied folks? Like, it's like one of those things where I just feel like how many of those people will be young? It's just, I think that there's so many other intersections that we have the opportunity to talk about right now that I'm nervous that people are not actually caring enough to hear from, because the reality is those intersections are the ones that have really rarely been seen, period. So it becomes, if you're truly in the space to listen to people right now, listen to the people who are actually not being heard the most first. Like, let's start really digging into the conversations and like having those chats and having, and people doing the work of seeing, you know, what does this person who meets a long list of intersections, let's listen to what that person thinks, because they're going to be able to tell us so much more about what's lacking than anyone else who is sitting in a lot of spots of privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I hope, I think that we are like, you know, there's been forward motion, but like, I think it could be a lot further than it is. And that on top of us being in the middle of a pandemic, like it's so many things piled on top of each other that people are putting out, you know, new postings and new castings of things. And they're like, you know, look at this, you know, mixed cast of people. It's so exciting. And I'm like, it doesn't feel exciting to me, because like, it's just one step closer to the world that we live in. Like I can't throw bells and whistles because you added, you know, because there's like a black person playing a part that a black person wouldn't have played, quote unquote. It's like, well, that, I don't know that we learned the lesson by just making a substitution. Like, why are we not asking that black person if they know any writers who might be able to write something new?
Mm. Right. You're so right. Looking at it as a binary problem is not going to solve anything for us. And one more question about Strange Loop before we
jump forward.
So as the first openly trans actor to originate a role in a Pulitzer Prize winning show, what do you hope this means for trans actors in the past and in the future?
That we are that much, I guess, one baby inkling of a step closer to getting the kind of visibility that we want to get. I don't, it's such a huge award. And even saying, like, even having that, like, she's the first, you know, openly trans actress to be a part, it's like, I can't even really feel the excitement underneath that, because there's so much work to do. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that I would feel that I would want to do cartwheels if the writer of the show was trans. Mm-hmm. Like if the actual person who received the grant and the emblem and all the, like, all of the stuff around it was actually a trans person, I think then I would want to do cartwheels. But being a part of the production of that thing is such an honor. But I think I don't even know how to feel about it in terms of, like, where does that put us? I don't know. 'Cause people don't even really know it, to be honest, 'cause nobody knows who I am yet. and I think that's a part of it. I think when my platform grows, I think that then I can be even more vocal about those smaller things that are happening. Because I feel like you need to actually, we live in such a digital moment where you kind of have to have that, you know, blue check mark and hundreds of thousands of followers before some of the powers that be even want to actually listen. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's part of why I would really love to be in this position. Like, I'd love, you know, hashtag book L. Morgan Lee in a series regular. So that I can have more space to like really have those conversations where more people are going to hear them in their cars and everywhere. I just think it's so important, because I don't feel like enough people have truly gotten into the door and then left their foot in the door. And like, and I feel like that's what I want to do. I want to be one of those people that gets in the room, gets comfy, cozy, is having drinks, is having a great time. And then there just happens to keep being more and more of us in the space. No one knows how they're getting there. And they just continue to come in, and like, just knowing that, like, ha ha ha, I sent out invites and none of you had any ideas. But I want to be like that person.
Oh, I love thinking of the industry as a party that you suddenly take over.
She's like sitting quietly in the background, just to herself, and just gradually keeps moving up in table. Yeah. Next thing you know, she's like standing at the podium speaking. There's a room full of people like her in the room.
Amazing. That'd be awesome. And, you know, another evening that was like that, we had previously had Lady Dane on the podcast as a guest, and yeah. And she was telling us about Black Trans Women at the Center that you did with Long Wharf. Can you share what it was like to be part of that event?
It was wonderful to have an event that was actually centered on Black trans women specifically. Was a gift. Long Wharf, they really did what they needed to do, with the assistance of Dane and being led by Dane, and being led by, I think that there was a little team that produced that event. And I think that they all did, what needed to be done in that moment. And I think there was, you know, maybe there's always going to be people who feel different kinds of way about the material that's being heard or what's happening around that. But the evening happened and the plays were presented. And I think that was what was important. That was the most important thing about the night, is that you got a group of plays that were centered around Black and trans people. I was in a piece by Desi Bing that was called Things Unknown. That piece was great. Like it was whenever I get to do material that's written by or specifically for trans people, it's just special, and especially when the piece is written by the demographic of people who it's talking about, there's just so much nuance present that like cis people just would never figure out, because there's things that I think that cis people ultimately just don't get. Even when you try to understand, it's just they're not gonna fully get it. And I think that that's we need to have more of those kinds of moments so that cis writers who are excited about trans stories and trans people will even know like where to start. Because I think everyone's in a space where they really want to plow forward right now with trans stories. And I think there are a lot of people who do want to hear from trans people. But these people are already in the room and they're like, we want to expand our portfolio. And it's like, well, I mean, that's great. And like, yes, but like, bring us in the space with you to help you do that before you sort of take the reins and basically tell us who you think we are. That's like, it's a very weird dynamic in a room.
Wow. Yeah, totally. It's so amazing that event happened though. Hearing from Lady Dane about how it all came together. It's just
so wonderful.
Yeah. She's a powerhouse for sure. this is a little bit of a long question, so stick with me here. but we're very excited about it. So last fall, you starred in a music video of the song Strange Power from the musical Maxa, which was set to debut last year. When talking about the project, you said, this is the mindset that theater is dead and that our business is over, but I have never felt like there was more of a pulse under the city and under the business than during this time. How are we innovating theater in the time of COVID-19? Carefully, with respect, and with all our hearts. And almost a year into theaters being shut down, do you still feel this is the case?
Sometimes I say things that sound so nice together. I'm like, oh wow, that sounds really lovely. That sounds really lovely. I think that we are a little less careful now than we were. And I do think that there are things happening. I think that we've gotten to the point where we're almost at the year mark. So there's an anxiety under everything. We're all ready to get out of this. I'm personally climbing the walls. So I feel like it's like we're all ready for this to be done. And I think that that's starting to creep into the ways that things are being made. So I think we're going to have to hold on a little bit to the sort of careful one step at a time process that we were doing before. But I do think that we are still there. That pulse is definitely still there. I think that it has calmed a little bit on the theater side of things, but that's because the TV film side of things has really picked up. I think we're going to have to figure out what that means right now, because I think there are a lot of theater actors who are not getting appointments for TV film things. And as a result are still sort of sitting, twiddling thumbs. So I don't know. We have to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the push to just the lack of work for actors is going to be hardest hit for those who are least represented, right? So
that's a big factor. Mm-hmm. It's that the people who do not have representation how do you work at all? Like, it's, I mean, I got, God forbid you're someone who doesn't have representation and who is like just out of school and new to the business, because you're starting with like no pieces together. And if you didn't go to one of the big schools, then it's going to be even more challenging. But like, I feel like if you can make it through this, it's going to be smooth sailing after it for you. It's just, it's like, you have to stick it out though. And I do think that there's a lesson in sticking it out. There's this idea, there are a lot of people in this, I speak as if I'm so old. There are a lot of people that is, that's in this, that are in this generation, who I do think have this, there's a hint of entitlement that creeps into how they're handling things. And I think it's just, it's a little, it just feels a little like it needs to be, people need to be reminded of perspective. There are people that have been here fighting for the same things that you're fighting for so many years before you. And to completely ignore their fight, ignore those people, to act as if you deserve this, you deserve this. It's like, well, like you might have to sit and wait for a moment. Like that's also part of the business. You get to the city and you start auditioning and maybe you don't get Broadway on the first time you're here. Maybe that doesn't work out. And you keep fighting, you keep pushing until you can be seen. People will not see you right away. You just got here. People might not actually pay attention to you because you just got here. And I think that there is an element of that that I don't think people see when they're actively pushing for it. When I first got to the city, I was like, oh, I'm here. I'm only doing Broadway. That's the only thing I'm interested in, period. Like, and it was a thing of like, I look back at that now and like, bless your heart. Like you were talented. You were talented. You could easily have been on Broadway, but like, no, that it was not your time for that. And I'm very grateful for those things not working out because those things are what got me to today. And I mean, it's been a little more time than I typically talk about, but I'm really happy because I think that, the foundation was really solidly built and I didn't come in expecting to be, you know, I did come in expecting something, but I was beat up enough that I understood that like, sometimes you have to like work and sometimes you have to actually wait and like life is going to do what it's going to do for you. You have to trust in the universe that what is meant to be will be, and what's yours is always going to be yours.
Yeah.
It's a little loopy doopy, but I'm a little heady, but yeah.
No, that's so great. And like hearing that, I hope that a lot of people who have that mentality right now and are using COVID as like the excuse that they should do something else. Like, I'm just worried that we're going to lose some great talents because people see COVID as an obstacle that they can't overcome. When, as you're saying, so many people have been struggling to fit into this industry in some way for years and years and years. This is just one of the many things that's a problem.
We will not lose the people that we're meant to hear. And the people that we do lose, we're meant to do something else. And it's like, it's that story, their story was not one that was supposed to be seen by us. They'll be used some other kind of way. That's what I mean by I'm loopy. Like I feel like there's no such thing as like, there's no such thing as falling backwards because you're always moving forward. Like, so it's like we don't lose those things. It's like, we were just not meant to hear that. We just weren't meant to hear that person. And like, it sucks to us. I have people in my life that I'm like, you're not in theater. Like, you dropped out. What's wrong with you? You're so talented. but I know that like, what makes them talented is also being used in other ways that is fostering so many more talented people coming up too. One of those people I know is a teacher in New Jersey. She's like one of the best voices I've ever heard in my life. And it pains me that she is not on stage or not being heard. And like, but I know that she's teaching kids and she's like putting what she does into all those kids. And I'm like, you know what? I see you. I see you. I'm still upset, but I see you.
Oh, that's such a beautiful way to look at it.
Yeah, I'm going to be able to sleep better tonight.
Well, that's what it's all about, finding ways to like to keep your sanity.
Yeah. Going back to Maxa, where this question originated, are we going to be able to see that anytime soon?
I hope so. I know that Mika and Thomas, Mika Kaufman and Thomas Jacobson, are, they just did a workshop of the show, or I guess of sections of the show, at University of Minnesota in Duluth, where Thomas teaches. And I think in the fall, they're going to be doing a production of the show. So like, what a snazzy way to like, you know, try your show out and see how things work when you're a teacher in a university. You could just use your students to try it out. So I don't know. Like, I'm very curious about sort of what they want to do. I personally would love for them there to be backing for the show to do it on film, because I think that that story is so dark and so delicious, and on film would really give them like the chance to show everything they'd like to show, and we could really get into the gore and really get into how dark and dangerous the show is. It's a lot. The piece is like, It's an example of when you have a non-binary book writer discussing trauma, that like it's, I was like literally sobbing just reading like updates in the, like the rewrites. Wow. And I'm like, these are these pieces that like people have no clue. Like, and not that sobbing about a piece is like always a great thing, but like, it's just, some people really get it. Some people just get it, that it's, yeah, I won't spiral into another conversation. I will let you continue. Cause there's a show everyone needs to see called La Veneno that is really wonderful on HBO Max. Speaking of people who get it.
Ooh. Wait, what's it called?
It's called Veneno. V-E-N-E-N-O.
Sweet. Oh my God. Can't wait.
Yeah. Adding it to the list.
binge.
Yeah. Well, I hope we get to see it. And I, just from that clip of the song, like, oh my God, the movie version of it would be insane.
and that's why I was thinking, I was like, oh my God, this music video is like, this is kind of what it could look like on screen. It's so good.
Yeah. It's like sexy and terrifying and yes. epic. And, yes. Yeah.
So great. All the good things.
Yes, exactly. So speaking of another project that is also in development, we saw the video of you singing Silk from the upcoming Danish Girl with the Trans Voice Company. So beautiful. And we wanted to go to a statement that the producers released about the show. And they said that the performers, whose roles will be set only on vocal range and not by gender, age, or any other demographic markers. Can you tell us a little bit about how it's different to be involved in a show that is cast this way as opposed to other shows you've been in the past?
Sure. So first thing, the video that came out with that choir, there were like 8 or 9 people who were trans in the choir, but everyone else was cis. Okay. So it was definitely a mix of people in that video. The genders or the conversation about types around the way the show is built. So Lily and Gerda are specific, and then the characters that are built around them are open. And I do think that from what we've seen so far, because we've been kind of zooming a bit on things, and like, I was supposed to be there in January, but things happened the way it did. So now there's like, potentially I'll be there in March, over in London. And so we'll see kind of what we're doing in a workshop over there. The players have been sort of, it's interesting because they're all playing things that do kind of align a bit with the genders that they are closest to. There are cis people in the mix as well. And it's interesting because I feel like because it's a brand new project, it's inward in the development process, it doesn't feel strangely different than any other developmental process, which maybe is the whole point altogether, that it's like, if you just pick the people who are right for the track, then we can go forward. And so I think that's kind of what's happened. It's that they're building these tracks and the people who are playing, because they're playing lots of other things kind of throughout. They're playing lots of different people within their lives. So those people are, I think there's been some, I'm trying to think of the people that are like main featured so far in the show. And like, they're all playing things that sort of align with their gender. It's just, there might be a trans person in that spot, where in America, there has not been a trans person able to play this particular kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that team in particular is just really fantastic because they are really committing themselves to doing the work of getting it right. And I'm still a little like blown over by the fact that I'm getting to do Lily in this story because I remember seeing the film and I am one of those people that was like, well, this is not really cast appropriately, but the work was really beautiful. And like, so I felt like it was never something that I would have imagined being asked to do. So getting that chance to work on this, I'm like, I'm a Black trans woman. Like that's could not be as far away from Lily Alba as it couldn't be possibly as far. Well, actually they've already cast someone who's a man. So that's quite far away. But being a Black woman in that space does make me feel sort of a different way. And I think it's kind of, that is what I would like to see more of, kind of tracing back to your earlier question. It's like, I'd like to see more of, we expect something, but we get something different. And what we get, you're like, oh, that's why she's there. That mm-hmm. makes sense. That's, it's also just giving someone else an opportunity to tell the story, whose intersections and things are going to bring nuance that you wouldn't have seen if you'd sort of, if they'd seeked out this, you know, very, very, very thin, white, androgynous person who usually gets these kinds of tracks. If they'd seeked that out, they probably wouldn't get the same things that they're going to get from, that they're getting so far from me. So I'm just really like excited about getting to even do it. Fingers crossed that somebody sees it and picks it up and then we're on the West End. Oh,
that'd be amazing.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. And I hope you get to go there in March. That'd be so much fun.
Yes. Fingers crossed. It's just to get out of the city.
Yeah.
I've got to leave. I've been in this apartment for a year now. I have to go.
Oh my God. Yeah. It has been almost a year. Wow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've talked about your film stuff and theater. And so you performed in this diverse array of theatrical productions as well as film and TV. Is there a form that you're most passionate about, and how has that changed or not throughout your career?
I'm actually sort of going back to what my initial thing was. So when I was a little kid, I wanted to be on TV. I wanted to be on some like primetime drama show. I was an intense child. I wanted to be like on a primetime drama, or like a soap and like a nighttime soap moment. And I feel like that's actually what I would really love to be doing right now. I think that's the area that I'm the most excited by, is definitely on camera. And that includes musicals. So like, it's like, I still want to always do musicals, but I think just the demand of an 8-show week is, it gets really, strenuous on you. And I'm not 21. So I think that like, there starts to be a little bit of a, okay, I want to be able to really write this out as long as I can write this out, because what I'm usually asked to do is a lot. So I'm like 8 shows a week of, I mean, even thinking of the Danish Girl, like, my God, like the journey is really a lot. Like it's a tall ask. So like 8 shows a week of that, think of you're doing it for like a year or two. Like you're really like putting years on your body and on your emotions and on your spirit. So I think I'd like to be able to very carefully select like the projects that I want to be able to expend that much of myself into that way, and then go back to my like job that changes every week. My job that's just something new and it's done, something new and it's done. And I'm compensated very, like very well for doing those things on TV. Mm. So yeah, it's, I love the, and the reach of television is just so much farther. We talked about that. The platform is very important to me. So I think, I'd love to be doing stage, but I'd almost like to do plays on stage more than musicals, to be honest with you.
Oh, amazing.
It doesn't mean I want to stop doing any of these things. I'm not saying I want to stop. Please do cast L. Morgan Lee. But I really am interested in more TV and including musicals on film. And then plays on Broadway.
Yeah. And then like thinking about a more inclusive Broadway or theater, like, the mm-hmm. only people who can do 8 shows a week are those who are, you know, physically and mentally able to keep up that stamina. It's a brutal schedule.
It's intense. Yeah. Like it's really, and it, I've just seen so many people go in and like get their big moments and they're like the center of the show. And then a year later, they look like 10 years older. Mm-hmm. And they've their bodies have wafted away and they're really skinny and they're like, and I'm just like, I don't know if I like I get it. And like, I mean, I'll come back to you all, as you know, in the event that the Danish Girl happens and we end up in New York again, I'll come back to you then waifed away looking 10 years older and going, remember when I said, I'm still trying to get to that place and I'm still not there yet. Now I can't eat anything and I'm really hungry and angry. And it's like, it's just not a place that I really would like to be. I enjoy having a dessert. I enjoy having a peaceful life.
Yeah. I feel like we need to get rid of the stigma of like seeming like you, if you need someone to do two shows a week for you or three shows a week for you, like normalize that. I'm always shocked that it's not more common. And then when it is, I feel like it's always surrounded by such negativity and it's
like this actor was suddenly incapable of holding up the weekend. It's like, well, operas do that. Like any of the other art forms that are extreme demands, they need that. If you're doing Mama Rose and Gypsy, I want you to have a matinee Rose. Like I want you to have someone there to actually take that on because it's a lot on you.
Yeah, and it's better for the audience member when they do get to see someone who is mentally and physically able to do the role.
That's true.
I know, it's like, yeah, we need to add it to the list of things to fix. There's so many. Oh, man. Well, you have so many talents. You are also a photographer. So we wanted to talk about that a little bit as well. How did you become interested in that kind of work? And how do you think being an actor informs how you get the best out of your clients for headshots?
I started doing photography. I was temping, and the company that I was temping with had a retreat that I got to organize for my department. And it was like this place upstate that we all went to on this retreat. And I kept taking pictures with my phone the whole time. And as I was doing it, I was like, you know what? This is interesting. I definitely always have an opinion. I always have something to say about things. I wonder if I bought a camera, what I could like do with this. And it was also a moment where I was like, I'd been doing some auditioning here and there for things, but I was developing a project, a musical. And people had seen like a reading of it, and I was having to hear people's opinions of what they thought that characters were supposed to do. And I'm like, well, but I've been living with this material for like years now. So like telling me what you think that person should be doing, or you telling me who you think that person is kind of a problem with me because I've been living with her in my head for 3 or 4 years now. And like, I think I know who she is a little better than you do, but I'm like happy to accept the note and I will move forward. And I was just at a place where I was like, I'm kind of tired of hearing everybody else's opinions on top of me. I would love to find something that I could do to fill time for myself that I could just put things out into the universe and not have to explain why they are there. And photography is that. Photography is something that you put that piece out, whatever it is, and anything anybody else puts on it is about them. It's not about you. And I was like, you know what? I really like that freedom. And it took me a while to start, taking headshots. Once I finally started taking headshots, I was like, I need to figure out what makes me a little different than all of the other, you know, 50,000 headshot people in New York City. I was like, I need there to be some like actual voice behind what I'm looking for. And once I figured that out, I think I started taking headshots, and it does help to be in the business because you know what you need. Like, you know what the headshot is supposed to be. I like to say that whenever people are shopping for headshot photographers, you would do yourself a better service to shop for the person that's shooting you and not necessarily just the referral that somebody made. Because it's one of those things where any pictures that I see of other people, if I know the photographer and I see their shots, what we're seeing is we're seeing a like snapshot from that person's brain. It's how that person views the world. So in a sense, you're getting to know, when you're looking at a headshot, you're actually getting to know something about the photographer. So it's like, if I see a headshot photographer that I think is interesting, it's like that you're hiring that person. If someone comes to me, they're trusting how I see people. They're trusting the world that I put you in my head. So it's like, so I would want to be taking pictures with photographers who are more vibrant and who have, who connect to you is what you're looking for. So I think it does help to be an actor just because you understand.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful shots too. I love looking through them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that they're alive. That's kind of my, I want you to feel something from the person on the shot. Like I would love if my brand, quote unquote, as a photographer for headshots, was that if someone passes through, they go, oh, Elle Morgan took this shot. And the reason they know that is because the person in the shot is like somehow speaking to them. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I would like for it to be.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I don't know, that will probably be fading out slowly but surely, though.
Yeah.
She's going to be wrapping up the headshot world in a bit, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I need to get mine in soon then. Okay.
Well, I've already met you now, so it's different. Yeah. It's like, if I've met you, then it makes, but like, I know that, thank God, I think acting is starting to pick up in some ways, and I'm going to need to filter that out soon.
It's great.
I'll still be shooting. It'll just be like fun shoots.
Awesome. So you've had the opportunity to collaborate with a lot of different writers and directors over your career. Is there an artist that you still want to collaborate with but haven't, or that you love collaborating with and want to work with again?
Ooh. Well, I have never worked with Michael John Lacusa, and I would kill to work with Michael John Lacusa, who you would know from Wall Party and Hello Again. And I'm in love with his work. And I love it because I just had a conversation with you about how musicals are so strenuous and so demanding and so. And Michael John writes worlds that are like extremely that. They are huge pieces that demand a whole lot. But like for Michael John, you do it. Like for music that touches you the way that music does. I think it's you have to. You have to do it.
So we originally had for the Queering the Canon section, it was about Sondheim because we saw your Sondheim cover online. It was so
sure.
Beautiful. But you could also talk about Michael John Lacusa if you'd like. So we're wondering, is there a show that exists that you would like to queer or a particular role that you would like to take on personally?
Well, since you opened it up to that changes things. Well, firstly, I'll say I don't think that my presence in the show necessarily would queer it per se, just because I'm a woman. So like this, and the tracks that I want to do are women. Mm. Like it's like, I'm not zany that way. So like, it's like, I'm pretty zany and quirky in my own way, but I feel like in terms of what I would think of as queering a show, I don't know that I would be the one to do that. And in Sondheim, the dream is Dot in Sunny in the Park with George. And just because I think that I think that having me in that track would certainly give reason for some of the response. And it's like one of those things where I don't necessarily want the director in either of these cases. I don't want the director to lean into the fact that I'm a trans actress. I want to just do the show that the writer wrote. Mm-hmm. However, I think that there is a layer of nuance to the fact that I am a trans woman and the fact that I'm a Black woman in both of these instances. Well, not the Michael John one. But like me as Dot would just bring some different colors to appear. Just A, because I'm Black, that would make a difference to her being sort of whispered about and talked about and have all these things around her. I love the scene where she's sitting in front of the powder, in front of the mirror, sort of dabbling and looking at herself and feeling things out. I think that there is like, there is nuance to knowing that the actress is trans who's doing these things. However, she also gets pregnant in the show. So it's like, I'm not playing a trans woman. I'm clearly playing a woman who is cis. But just knowing that the actress who is there, it's like, it's going to hit me in different ways than it would someone else. The Michael John role, well, there's a couple of them with Michael John, but one of them is certainly Marie Christine. This is my problem. Like, this is why I have to like talk about film and TV, because the things that I'm drawn to tend to be the most stressful, strenuous roles that kill you. It's like, this is why I'm like, Elle Morgan, you actually have to get on television, because otherwise you're going to kill yourself on stage. Like, you're literally going to play roles who are sucking everything out of you dry. So, but Marie Christine, I mean, like, that would be a dream. I think that one is an example of, it's just in my, like, that's just in my thing. I think that, I hate to say it for my own purposes, but for that one, I would definitely probably request a key change or two. So to me, in a sense, that would like muddy some things up for me in the why, because generally the roles that I want to play are things that I can already do. They're already roles that I can sing. If it's a musical. But Marie Christine is one that I know there's like one or two songs in the show that get a little bit high for me. And I could like get them out, but I would, it's like if it was a one night only moment, we could really like rough it through. But if I was like, we're going to do like a 6-week run, then it's like, well, let's change that key because I'm not going to be able to sing that crazy thing like that eight shows in that high emotional world that it's in. So I would definitely want to like shift it down a teeny bit, but still keep the quality of what the sound is that the composer intended. Because especially with someone like Michael John, I think that he's a genius. So the things that he writes, there is a sound, there's a particular timbre in his mind as he's writing. And so I would want to be able to hold true to that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a dream George to play opposite you as Dot?
I'm always searching for my George. Because that to me, that's been a dream role for me for so many years. I meet like literally I meet men and I'm like, whenever they're actors, I'm always listening and I'll go, oh, interesting. Okay. What kind of actor is he? Let's see. And it's like literally always, I'm always searching for a George.
I want to see you in both those shows so bad. Someone make it happen.
I hope you find your George soon.
Oh, in real life too. Let's get George in here.
He's a little nicer than musical George.
Oh, well, that's true. Don't ask for that. I just love emotionally distant people who are unavailable.
He's very alluring.
One of our last sections is a queer culture rec. So outside of theater, what would be your queer culture indulgence?
Hard question for me. I'm kind of a boring Jane. Let's see. I do a lot of, I mean, well, we can call that queer culture, I guess. I mean, I'm a Real Housewives crazy woman. I definitely watch many of the franchises. I do a lot of like, especially during this quarantine, this like pandemic period, I've been doing a lot of TV showy things. So like lots of binging. There's this series. Oh my God. Now I'm going to forget it. I think it's called like Winx the Saga. It's a show about fairies. It's a show that takes place in like a university kind of a setting where everyone is fairies. Mm-hmm. I'm all into magic and all that kind of stuff. In that way, I'm very like queer, quote unquote, because I feel like that is a queer sort of common thread that there is a lenience towards the magical of some way. So I do think, maybe it's called Winx the Saga or something, but it's about fairies. And I mean, it's awful. I mean, I probably shouldn't say that. I probably should not say that on like a public space, but like, it's one of those, like, it's like not great, but it's so great. And I binged the entire thing.
Oh, I love it.
It's lots of like guilty pleasure watching.
Perfect.
Amazing. Yeah. We're always looking for more like queer trash to watch. So
that's like, and not even, and like the only thing, like I think the only thing that remotely makes it quote unquote, that I would put it under the queer category, is just because it's about fairies. But yeah. like it's so like CW sort of cishet world where they're like all in this university, but I'm like, oh yeah, whatever. Like, but the characters, but the actual like, it's one of those ones that I'd love to like recast some other kind of way with lots of, like, that's an example of something that I would love to queer, for instance, like that world, The Vampire Diaries, like these projects that are very, already sort of otherworldly. So there's so much more availability for more variance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
Without losing the color that the show has already. Because I think for me, that's one of the things. I'm all about reimagining material and like sort of bringing a new idea to it. But I still want to always sort of preserve what the writer put on the page. Like I want to be able to preserve what that writer saw when they put it there. Otherwise, I'm more interested in new work where we are already included and we're already a part of the world that's there.
Yeah.
So we also wanted to check in with the organization that you wanted to shout out for Queer Give. So you mentioned Legacy, a Black queer production collective. Can you tell us a little bit more about them and how we can help out?
Yes. So they are, I'm going to read a little bit from their like little blurb. They're a group of Black queer artists based in New York City. And they've come together as a response to deep-seated underappreciation, undervaluing, and underfunding of Black queer art. They focus on uplifting Black queer voices and experiences by creating space for artistic endeavors, providing equitable compensation for time and work, and fostering fellowship and opportunity for our present and future communities. They are a group of four beautiful Black queer people who are trying to start they're in a space where they're trying to begin this company. And I believe they have like a season of projects that they want to work on. And so they're currently fundraising to try to get what they need to back these projects. And there's a lot of different angles. It's not just theater. There's like performance art and music videos and writing and poetry. And there's a lot of, they want to be really inclusive about what art looks like for queer people. So yeah, I'm so standing behind them. They just, during this Black History Month, they're doing this little like spotlight feature situation where they've asked people to, do videos for them, sort of spotlighting people that touch their lives within the Black history spectrum. So I did one of those recently for them, and it was like a reminder, like, oh my God, no, they've started this up and they're really trying to push forward. It's a great group of people. So definitely reach out to their website and such if you get a moment. They're on Instagram as well.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll share them in our the notes and on our social media too. Thank you.
Awesome.
And lastly, how can our listeners find you online?
I am on Instagram at L Morgan Lee. I'm on Twitter at @LMorgan_Lee. And my website is just lmorganlee.com. All of the letter L, Morgan Lee.
Amazing. Thank you so much, L Morgan, for being here.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us and share us with your friends.
We'd love to hear from you if you have any queer culture recommendations or other ideas about how to queer the canon. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at 845-445-9251 or email us at thesisonjoan@gmail.com.
And you can follow us on social. We're on Instagram and Twitter at @thesisonjoan.
Until next time, keep it queer.
Not that it'd be that hard for y'all to do.
Yeah, when he named like going to the boiler room, that like really took me back.
I don't think I've been to the boiler room, but I've definitely been to therapy, and he talks about that a lot.
Yeah. Would not recommend the boiler room. I don't know if the boiler room has survived the past year. It probably will. Well, like, it's one of those places that I think is hard to kill.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.